Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Wade Smith, who's in for Sean Pendergast. Sean Pendergast was at a WWE event in Jacksonville last night. I wish, if I were a better friend, I'd pay attention to actually like what it was and what he was doing there and everything. Because Sean's a big-time wrestling fan. Sean's big-time into wrestling, and Sean is big-time into gambling.
Yes.
Which feels ironic because there's I don't think he can gamble on pro wrestling, right? Because it's already somewhat predetermined.
Correct.
So he enjoys two things that will never they'll never meet, which is he's got
and
two
I think
mistresses.
But that's a good thing, though, because you don't want them to ever meet. You want them to
that's
be
true.
Separate.
That's true. He can keep his true love for wrestling intact, and it'll never be blemished by, oh,
correct.
I don't know, I gambled money on Stone Cold or something.
That's why I never bet on sporting events that are, like, near and dear to me. Like, if you're talking about the NBA Finals and my team's in the NBA Finals or in the Super Bowl, whatever it is, I'm not betting on that game. Because, listen, there is, like, a personal investment in – you know, my fandom and being successful, but I'll bet on games that are, you know, easy wins. I take bottles off of Ron and Show Hughley and stuff like that when I know I'm going to win the bet. And I'm still owed a bottle by Landry Locker now that I think about it. But that's the type of betting I do. But when it's something that's near and dear to my heart, I'm not betting on it.
The Astros are rapidly approaching the point where perhaps you might have to start gambling on them to keep it interesting. Now, some of that's not fair because, you know, for one, yeah, this was cruel. It was cruel that Yordan Alvarez was put on the COVID list. Nothing you can do about that. But then it was especially cruel that when he came back, they were playing a National League team, so you couldn't see Yordan Alvarez. So you're still missing.
Right.
You're still missing Altuve. You're still missing Yordan. We saw actual Alex Bregman last night as he got a couple of hits. We saw Yuli last night. Yuli entered the game going 1-for-11, but ends up scoring every run for the Astros yesterday. So we saw a little bit of what you want to see out of the Astros, but we know it's been dismal and it's been awful. And that's why I was encouraged last night to remember, oh, wait a second, I'm a stat nerd now. And whenever I feel bad about my baseball team,
right,
I can feel better by going to the advanced stats. Because the traditional stats, Wade, frankly, they care too much about things like ERA, batting average.
Wins and losses.
Runs scored. I mean, come on. People coming at me. Okay, the Astros are 15th in runs. That's not great, right? But, we all know. Batting average. I was at Target yesterday, and I heard some teenager talking about batting average to his father, and I slapped the kid across the face, and then his father thanked me for it. I said, "Son, nobody talks about batting average anymore. It's antiquated. It's old."
That's so 2005. Like, get with the times, man.
Yeah, you're 2000 and late. So it's all about expected batting average, the XBP. That's what it's all about these days. And guess who has the highest XBA in the entire league, both National or American League, all of Major League Baseball? The Houston Astros, that's right.
Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. They have the highest expected batting average, and a lot of that's based on just hit velocity and all that stuff.
That they're unlucky right now. They're hitting the ball really hard, and it's going straight towards defenders.
This is the key. That's baseball. When it doesn't go your way in baseball, you say, "Oh, we've had bad luck." That's all it is. Yuli, who's been playing well anyway. He was on a little bit of a cold streak, but as far as just looking for guys that are in the top 10 or top 15, Yuli's 12th on expected on base percentage. So there's on base percentage, but then there's expected on base percentage. The interesting thing about Wednesday, so for like Wednesday alone, this is where it got started. It got me started on, because I think Michael Schwab had tweeted this out. Yesterday, they did strike 7 balls at 97 miles per hour or harder against 4 Rockies pitchers, and only one fell for a hit.
And so you know that if you continue hitting the ball with that velocity, you're going to get base hits. You're going to generate runs. That's where the whole expected batted average thing, you know, comes into play. They just have to get they have to get lucky again, or they have to stop being unlucky. And that happens. That happens in baseball. I'd be interested to see that same list that, you know, how you have, you know, Yuli Gurriel is 12th in expected
XOBP.
XOBP. How many of the top 15 actually are in the top 15 in actual batting average? How much does it match up?
Don't make me slap you across the face, Wade.
I just want to know how much of a correlation or lack thereof is it. Like, is it better to be lucky than to be good? Is baseball one of those sports that is better to be lucky than to be good?
Theoretically, over time, it all balances out. You know, by the end of the year, like, it in theory, your XBBA should be close to your BP by the end of the season. But it doesn't always work out that way. I think some of what changes now, too, is because teams shift so much that I think pull hitters are probably – I wonder if the expected batting average of a pull hitter is actually – a little too generous, you know, because he's a victim of the shift so much versus guys that can really spray it all over the field.
But you would expect the nerds to include that into the numbers, right? Into the analytics of it. You should the shift that should be included into that, those numbers, right?
Well, that's one thing that went early on. I'll have to check up on this. Early on, I know one of the stats they had put out on the broadcast was that the Astros were like in the top 5 for hitting to the opposite field. Which is obvious, again, with today's baseball, a good thing. What's weird about where it's especially unlucky against the Rockies is when you're hitting the ball hard, that's a big field, and you're playing in the altitude. Yes. So between poking it into holes or just letting the altitude carry it out, you would hope that you got a little bit more luck than that. I think the biggest excuse by far, obviously, for the past several games has been that you just didn't have all your horses there because of COVID. This is the one that saddens me. My first little taste of advanced stats came through barrel rate, just because I thought it was a cool sounding thing.
Right.
Your barrel rate is how often you barrel a ball at a certain angle. Mm-hmm. So if you hit it like 98 miles per hour and you hit it at a certain angle, that's considered that you barreled it. So the percentage of time that you're barreling the ball, it should mean that with a high percentage, that means you're going to get a bunch of home runs.
Yes.
Astros, they might be hitting with a lot of velocity, but they must have their launch angles all messed up because they're only 14th in barrel rate, and that saddens me.
And that's right down the middle. I mean, that's mediocre. You got to get a little bit higher than that. And if you want to turn those high velocity hits into home runs.
You know what I'm not buying either?
What's
I'm not
that?
Buying that Miles Straw should be excused from his bad play in the outfield on Tuesday night because there was only a 20% catch percentage or whatever it was they said on the broadcast yesterday.
See, eye test says he should have caught the ball. And maybe my eye test is not analytically driven. It's just based off of watching baseball for a ton of years. That looked like it was going to be a catchable ball off of the bat, and he didn't catch it. And so 20%, yeah, I mean, the numbers tell you that, hey, it's not as bad as you look. But what's up with the Dusty Baker vaccine deal?
Because Miles Straw being excused for having
not necessarily him just being excused from the next game, but like him saying, well, he just got that shot and maybe did that affect him catching that ball or not? I don't know. Just throwing that out there. Like, are you buying that? Are you buying? Because if you've gotten the vaccine,
know.
And you know that you've experienced that you kind of had some lingering effects of it. So, I mean,
was good. I got pretty lucky. I didn't have many issues at all. And I consulted with the professionals. It's very unlikely. I felt something really weird like 10 days later. Very unlikely that was because of the vaccine. Wade, my knee-jerk reaction is, okay, like let's can it with saying that it was the vaccine. But I know people that are sick as dogs after getting that Pfizer vaccine. And my mother-in-law had the Moderna. Now, most of these people are 45 or older, but I know that if younger people are having anything close to the effects that some of the older people I know are having, then I could see it being kind of tough to play a baseball game like that and to look like your best self. The problem is that Straws had some of these some of these flubs, you know, long before the vaccine.
He wasn't a great outfielder before this, and all of a sudden he had an off moment like that.
That's
an all-star playing in the center field. Like that's what you get.
But some of the smart baseball people were saying in the preseason that Straw was a better center fielder than George Springer, and I'm trying like to be open to it.
Potentially, or that he already
that
was.
He is. Yeah, and I'm trying to be open to it. But you know what happens in baseball, like at every level, is that sometimes, I mean, it happens in every sport. Sometimes people look at the physical skills and they think, oh, well, of course that guy is better. You know, oh, he's so fast that, it can't be that hard to play center field. Yeah, he's going to be better because he's so fast and he's faster than George Springer, without forgetting that, okay, no, it takes a whole lot of first step instincts and reading the ball and knowing the ballpark and all that stuff. I could see Straw having the potential to be a better center fielder than George Springer, but I just don't remember George Springer making as many errors or misjudgments in the outfield as Miles Straw did.
Yeah, that's pretty much, man. I miss George. I miss
him. Pitchers, this is big. Ryan Pressly, number 2 spin rate on his curveball. So there you go. Take that.
Number 2 in the entire major leagues?
All of Major League Baseball.
That's big time now. We're not just talking about the American League. We want to add the National League into that thing too. Number 2, that's a big deal.
When you've got the number 2 spin rate on your curveball in all of baseball after 13% of the season, I feel like you deserve some kind of a spin rate award for that. Also, the team, for the pitchers, the team pitching exit velocity by the opponents, 7th lowest in the league.
Okay.
A lot of soft contact. So basically, I'm here to tell you, everybody, the Astros are actually dominating and there's nothing to worry about whatsoever because frankly, none of the actual things like runs or anything else matter. The Astros, I do believe the bats will be just fine. I am just nervous as hell about the state of the pitching, both the bullpen and just the experience of the starters, their inability to go more than 5 innings. That's the part that's got me nervous. I think the bats will come around.
Well, you've convinced me that the Astros have lost 9 out of 10 because, 1, they haven't had all of their horses. 2, they've been extremely unlucky. And if you're unlucky, that always flips. And that's just how it works in baseball. So hopefully they can get out of this thing sooner than later. But you're right, the pitching deal, they don't have those top-of-the-line guys that they had in the past. Cole is not here, and Verlander's not playing. So you don't have those guys that you can just depend on to be stoppers when you're going through a lull as far as pitching. They're going to have to manufacture innings out of their pitching staff in order for them to have some sustained success. And you don't have any basis that you know that you can just really count on that's going to be the case, and so it gives you a lot of cause for concern.
Wade Smith, who's filling in for Sean Pendergast today, Wade Smith has a trade proposal for Deshaun Watson. Would you accept it? Tune in next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, Wade Smith, former Texans offensive lineman, former Pro Bowler, is in for Sean Pendergast today. Sean will be rejoining us tomorrow after his trip to balmy Jacksonville for a pro wrestling event. Wade, you have a trade proposal.
I do.
I'm mulling this over. I'm actually stroking my beard as I look at it. If this is what you propose to me and the rest of America, I want our listeners to text in. Tell me if you would accept this or not. 713-572-4610. If today you became the GM of the Houston Texans and the New York Jets offered you the later first-round pick and their second-round picks this year. Do they have 2 second-round picks this year?
They do.
Okay. And 2 conditional second-round picks over the next 2 years, would you take that deal for Deshaun Watson? You're on the clock. What would it take? My first gut to that was, yes, I'll take it. I'll take anything. But I am horrible. I'm horrible. My wife gets so angry at me whenever we list anything on eBay or something. In my mind, I'm like, nobody's going to want this piece of crap. And I listed at a low price or a low reserve, and it's gone within like 12 hours. So At this point, it's not like I would be calling Deshaun Watson a bad name or anything, but I might be saying, it's gonna be tough to unload Deshaun Watson. I'm getting nervous. I'm starting to sweat. I got too many possessions. You know, first you own your possessions, then your possessions own you. That whole saying. I'm just gonna go ahead. I'll let it go for whatever. In a first round pick and 2 second round picks this year, when I'm sitting here with absolutely zilch right now, and then getting another couple of potential second round picks next year, I would take that. You give me a first round pick of any sort right now, and I feel like I'm hedging against Deshaun potentially being worth less. Boy, that's, except I've settled in on
What I offered you was a little bit less than what you just stated. Now, are you trying to hustle me, GM Seth Payne?
I said you gave me a first round pick
and a second round pick this year. You said right. 2 second round picks. I feel like GM Seth is trying to hustle me for 2 second round picks, even though they have two. They're gonna give up one and keep one. They have two first round picks.
Oh, okay.
They're gonna give up one and keep one. Yeah, you're trying to hustle me. I see what you're trying to do.
I'm gonna take
both of those second round picks this year. No. The later second round pick this year, and then next year, and the next 2 years, you'll get conditional second round picks based off of play time only. Like if Deshaun Watson plays over 50% of his snaps this season, the next season you'll get the second round pick. If not, you'll get a third, and then the same thing the following year. If he plays over 50% of the snap, you get a second round pick. I think that's a fair offer. If I'm Joe Douglas of the New York Jets and I'm offering you something, taking everything into account, taking the uncertainty of Deshaun Watson and what he's going, his situation with the lawsuits and, you know, press conferences popping up every 2 or 3 days, like, I think that's a fair offer to you. Will you be willing to accept it?
I would. I'm actually, let me think about this. A few days ago, I must have been, I was being just kind of down in the dumps about a few things. And just for everybody listening, I'll give the disclaimer. We're going to talk strictly on the football side of things here. Obviously, these are very serious allegations, and it's an awful situation potentially. And we're not trying to minimize that whatsoever. But we have the football side of things that we can kind of talk about and compartmentalize. The fact that it's only a 23rd overall pick from the Jets, that's where I feel like, even though a few days ago I was starting to feel like Deshaun would never go for anything more than a second round pick, I remembered, okay, Jameis Winston still got drafted with a first round pick. Yes. Various other guys that have had issues have gone on, even if they've been found guilty of things, have gone on and still gotten either paid big contracts or been traded. That I think Deshaun, because of his age, and because I think ultimately this probably does get settled some way, I think it's headed towards settlement, that he'll probably get a first round pick anyway. So don't go for the first round pick right now when it could potentially be 2 first round picks in the future. I would pass on your offer right now.
Pass on my offer. That's all I can give you, because If you're the Jets right now, you're sitting in a position where you could take Zach Wilson and be happy with that. You could take Justin Fields. There's a young quarterback that you can bring into the fold and build around that. But you also, if you made this trade for Deshaun Watson, you got your quarterback for the next 10 years, and you got the risk that comes with it because of his court issues. But then at the same time, you can take that number 2 pick and trade back. You can get the first round pick that you just gave up, you can get that right back. You know what I mean? Yep. And you can get back any second round picks in the future that you might give up to the Texans, and you get the quarterback that is ready made. You just have to assume that risk, and you have to assume that PR hit. So that's all I'm going to offer you. I'm not going to sweeten the pot. I feel like, you know, I really love what I got going here with Zach Wilson. We can bring him in as the number 2 overall pick. But I feel like if you're amicable to it, or if the text line is amicable to it, or the Twitter, whoever it may be, I think it's a good deal. I think that's the type of deal. We're about 7 days away from the draft. That's the type of deal that is going to be put on the table if there is a deal
table.
And so I think that's the key thing about it. It's not an insult when you take everything into account.
It's not an insult, and that, you know, all those teams are saying, hey, look, we're taking a big risk here too, that we might be giving up a first round pick for a guy that might end up being, who knows, suspended for an entire year,
right?
And whatever might happen after that. So I just lost this text. Somebody said that, don't you also just want to get rid of him since he doesn't want to be here anyways? The sooner you get rid of him, the more you're delaying this team rebuilding. Is that fair to say? I think there's a balance there, and it's a matter of, you got to remember, it's, yes, he wants to be gone, and at least previously it looked like he was willing to hold out for a long stretch of time, but he's going to have value. Before this draft, if it weren't for all the allegations, then this would have been his greatest value. But he'll have a lot of value before the 2022 draft, and there might be a really good chance that it's a lot higher before the 2022 draft than it obviously is right now. As far as the distraction that it creates, frankly, the Texans are very unlikely to be a very competitive football team this year, regardless of what happens. So I don't think you worry too much about the distraction or the cloud hanging over your head. It's just, it's the old saying that everybody hates, it is what it is. It's going to be what it's going to be for the next year or so. And it's not going to be pleasant, and it's not going to be great. But I think if there's a chance of getting two or three first round picks before next year's draft, you gotta hold out and wait for that.
Yeah, I tell you what, like, Nick Caserio, from what I've gathered from him, like, in the way things are being done over there, like the whole PR side of it, or the whole, having to hold on to Deshaun Watson until next season, I don't think he's going to mind that part of it at all. I think what's going to be the deciding factor for him is if he sees, you know, a couple guys in this particular draft that he says to himself, yeah, I really like these guys. You know, we have them valued at a certain level, and we think we can get them at number 23 in the draft, or there's somebody in the second round that can really help us kind of accelerate the process based off of what the evaluations that they've put forward so far. To me, that would be the determining factor if they say we'll go ahead and make a deal this year, because we haven't evaluated next year's draft yet, and we really like, you know, a handful of guys in this draft that we feel like that we can get. I think that would be the determining factor. And I don't think he would put as much stock, and the Texans would put as much stock of, if we hold on to him, we're going to have to hear about questions about Deshaun Watson over this next season. And that, I don't think that's going to play much into it. He just strikes me as somebody that doesn't give a damn. And as a GM, you got to have that mentality. Like, I don't give a damn. Like, I'm going to do what's best for our situation. And if it's, the best thing for our situation is holding on to Deshaun and getting that value you're talking about next year when it goes back up. If things work out the way Deshaun is hoping to work out with these cases, then you wait and you take the negative backlash that you might potentially get from the media or from fans or whoever.
I think from the Jets side of things, one of our listeners says this, and I'm sensing this. He says, I think Jets fans would riot if they passed on Wilson. Jets fans have become irrationally exuberant about what that franchise might do with this 193-pound kid, Zach Wilson. I'm joking. He's much heavier than 193 pounds. Not much, but much heavier than
198. He's 198.
Yeah, I think he is. He's not. Look, there's plenty of smaller. I don't worry about size as much as I used to when it comes to quarterbacks. I think guys like Alex Smith and Kyler Murray and some of those guys. I guess Alex Smith might be the best example. He's not a big guy at all, and until J.J. Watt ruined his career, that was pretty much, you know, he was pretty resilient. So, I think the Jets, including the 49ers, like, they kind of, I think they made that decision a few weeks ago. They saw the writing on the wall, and they said, well, you know what? Deshaun Watson is not to be, and they've probably been full bore focused on their rookies since that point.
And I tell you what, the one team that's still, there's still rumblings about them still being in on Deshaun Watson is the Miami Dolphins. And you literally could do the exact same trade with the Miami Dolphins, because that's a team that's been rumored to still want him despite all the charges. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the next 6, 7, or 8 days, or I don't think it will happen until next year around draft time. So I think that's kind of where we are right now. I think it's going to happen sooner, or it's going to happen way later. And if it happens way later, I think that's when you can get the most out of Deshaun. But it's just going to delay your process, like the texter said, of actually moving forward and rebuilding the team from ground up.
Wade alerted me to something, and everybody that just tuned in, Wade Smith is filling in for Sean Pendergast. Sean, I'll be back tomorrow. Former Pro Bowl offensive lineman for the Texans, Wade Smith is filling in. Wade alerted me something just before this segment that I'm going to say this. It might very well become the fight of the century, and I can't believe I'm saying that, and it's not a complete joke. This might be the fight of the century coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast is out for today. Filling in for him is Wade Smith, former Houston Texans offensive lineman and Pro Bowler. And Wade, you alerted me to this. And frankly, I'm going to apologize to the listeners because I got confused. The Paul brothers, Logan Paul and Jake Paul.
Yes.
Jake Paul's the one who's actually serious about boxing. Logan Paul is the one who kind of can box, but he's 0-1 as a professional fighter. He fought some other YouTuber. Where Jake Paul, not that I'm saying anybody should take him seriously yet, but he at least is serious about boxing. Floyd Mayweather and Logan Paul are apparently back on for their potential exhibition boxing match. I had said this might be the fight of the century, and I meant it, not even joking. That's when I thought it was Jake Paul versus Floyd Mayweather, which, don't get me wrong, still would be a joke, and yet still might be the fight of the century because these Paul brothers are so huge on YouTube and social media that they attract eyeballs the way that, frankly, like a lot of other actually bona fide boxers could not.
See, I feel like that when Floyd fights Logan Paul, he's going to knock him out early in the fight, and then Jake's going to jump in the ring, and then they're going to have another fight right after.
Oh,
that.
Like immediately afterwards?
Immediately after that. It's going to be like,
no,
you can't pick on my brother like that. He's going to jump in the ring, and then they're going to – then that's when the fight of the century is going to take place.
It's an exhibition. That's not the way the fight game works, though. You make
$50
million. Mayweather makes $50 million from an exhibition by just toying around with Logan Paul for a while. And then they sell the Jake Paul fight after that. Meanwhile, Jake Paul will have fought another couple guys. He just fought Ben Askren, who is he's an MMA guy, but he's also, he's a grappler more so than he is a striker.
Yes.
And he knocked Ben Askren out. Ben Askren had been retired.
Let's not understand the knockout. That knockout was legit. Like
that was a right. No.
He went night-night. Jake Paul is dead on his legs.
Jake Paul is at least serious about boxing. Like Jake Paul, I'm not saying he's going to be an awesome professional boxer or anything, but at the very least he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
And Ben Askren is a retired MMA guy whose forte was wrestling.
Correct.
So he was going against a professional MMA guy. So I'll give him credit for that. But it's not the same as Floyd Mayweather. There's a really, really big difference. And Mayweather did it with Conor McGregor, right? He just kind of toyed with him and made a show of it. But it was obvious that Mayweather – and that's against Conor McGregor, who's an actual accomplished fighter, but an MMA guy, not a boxer. I think that people are just going to – and I'm guilty of it myself. I haven't paid for one of these fights yet. One of these trumped up celebrity versus boxer or anything.
You didn't pay for the Tyson. Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. You didn't pay for that one.
Well, that would be at least enough. Those are actually boxers, though, and I didn't pay for that.
But they're like 50. Five.
Right. But at least they're actual boxers. You know, like they're actually professionals that made a career of the sweet science,
right,
as opposed to Jake Paul, who's just awesome at getting clicks and he works his butt off at boxing. But I can't take him seriously in a fight. And it's not even Jake Paul versus Floyd Mayweather. It's Logan Paul versus Mayweather.
Which I don't understand how this really came about, but the idea of Floyd Mayweather fighting somebody like Logan Paul, I feel like that's just 2021. And you know what? Floyd is going to make so much bank off of it. I ain't mad at him. I'm not mad at him. He's going to generate revenue wherever I saw a post on Instagram where he's putting out there, you know, the top five cities of where they're going to hold the fight, in Las Vegas, LA, I think Atlanta's on there, Miami, Dallas. So you got all these cities that are, you know, he's going to determine where he's going to have this fight. Wherever the fight is, there's going to be a lot of people in that city that are going to get opportunities, jobs, money that he creates every time that Floyd Mayweather has a fight. So people can talk negatively about Floyd because he's not a likable figure. He's a lightning rod. Either you love him or you hate him, but he creates opportunities for others. So I am not mad at him that he's fighting Logan Paul because that's going to generate clicks. It's going to generate interest, and people are going to want to watch.
I'm not mad at him. I'm mad at myself. This is, I'm telling you, I'm not, there's no room for me to be mad at Floyd Mayweather. Of course, I'm going to tell a guy, no, you're not allowed to make $50 million by fighting somebody that poses almost zero threat to you whatsoever.
Yeah.
The only thing I would worry about from Floyd Mayweather's standpoint is that at some point, you know, he's 50-0 in professional boxing. 50-0.
Are you counting the Conor McGregor fight in that?
I don't know if that was a sanctioned fight or not. That was probably just an exhibition,
either.
Wasn't it?
I don't know if he's 51-0 or if he's 50-0. Okay. But he's something, it's ridiculous, whatever it is.
At some point, in the Logan Paul versus Ben Askren, or the Jake Paul versus Ben Askren, that was a sanctioned fight. This would be an exhibition, Logan Paul versus Floyd Mayweather, and I would imagine the one thing that Paul does have is a huge weight advantage, a size advantage. I feel like that's going to be to his disadvantage versus Mayweather, because if Mayweather lets it go like 6, 7, 8, 9 rounds, that extra 40 pounds you're lugging around versus Mayweather and trying to punch that dude, that'll wear you out real quick.
And Mayweather is in ultimate shape always. Like he just works out religiously. So that's tough to go the distance with that guy.
But I would just worry that at some point, if Mayweather keeps doing this, he's going to end up with a blemished record because he's going to get caught. He's going to get caught by a punch, you know, when he's 57 years old fighting, I don't know, like the latest soap opera star or something, whatever's selling the most. It'll be some star on some social media platform we've never heard of with virtual reality and everything. And Floyd Mayweather will end up with like a 55-1 record or something because he's just going to keep doing it.
You know who I want to see Floyd fight? I want to see him fight the dude at Walmart that dropped the fake Bruce Campbell. That's the fight I want to see. I want to see that fight because I think that dude's in a different weight class than Floyd, but they're probably about the same height. He looked like he has some skills, you know, some around-the-waist skills that he put into use. But I want to see that fight, the guy that dropped the fake Bruce Campbell.
For those of you that don't know, this happened a couple weeks ago. There was some security footage of a guy who got in a fight, or I guess it was just a phone footage of a guy who got in a fight in a Walmart, and this big guy that looked like he could have been a retired offensive lineman got in a fight with some other guy who I was described as a Walmart employee. I didn't see that it was clear that he was.
Neither one of them looked like they worked there. The dude that dropped the big guy, he had on a hat in a black t-shirt. He didn't work at Walmart.
So the smaller guy dropped the big guy, but it was circulated on social media widely. It went viral saying that it was former Raiders offensive lineman Bruce Campbell. So Bruce Campbell was getting clowned on for a solid 48 hours because even after Bruce Campbell chimed in, and other people did too, like other NFL writers and Oakland Raiders writers said, hey, that's not Bruce Campbell. Yeah. Poor Bruce Campbell was still getting mocked thoroughly. And there's probably somebody listening right now that still thought that was Bruce Campbell because they saw the initial video and then didn't check back in. I think Bruce Campbell should sue whoever put it out there that it was him. His good reputation has been
He's been slandered unmercifully from people talking noise about him, and it's not true. Bruce Campbell should be able to – would you pay money to watch Bruce Campbell fight the fake Bruce Campbell in exposition? Like, I'm trying to be a fight maker here. Let's make something happen.
Well, there's probably something – you know, there's something to that because even if you go back to the original days of MMA and what was the other thing they used to do in boxing all the time where it was kind of amateurs, like guys off the street that would box. Butterbean was a big guy in that.
Yeah.
That's how he got
tough
his start.
Man? You're talking about Tough Man?
Yeah, the Tough Man competition.
Yeah. That was good watching. That was good TV, man.
I would have thought that would have really caught on. Stuff like that would have caught on big on the internet. Like almost,
Man, I remember watching Tough Man at my mom, like when I still lived with my mom. So the internet wasn't that big. This is like in the late 90s. Right. I feel like I was watching Tough Man.
It was all on cable television.
Yeah,
and likewise with MMA. I mean, with MMA, it was before it was refined to where it is now. And it was a lot of like, hey, let's see, is a kung fu guy better than a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy? Yeah. Is he better than an Olympic wrestler? All that stuff. And nobody kind of – the guys didn't know each other's disciplines yet. So you'd see some world-class ass whoopings from guys that, like – it would either be – it was usually like a jiu-jitsu guy might take on a kung fu guy.
Yeah.
And the kung fu guy had no grappling skills whatsoever, so he'd just get tied up immediately. Like, even – like, early on, I think nut shots and fish gouges and stuff were or fish hooks were legal early on, and it was pretty brutal. It was pretty ugly. And then after a while, everybody obviously got better and learned the other skills and everything. I don't know. I don't have an appetite for that stuff anymore. I can't. When I watch real fights on the internet on YouTube, I get kind of nauseous in my stomach when I see guys get taken one to the skull.
It just depends on the fight. I mean, if it's somebody that like is talking really crazy to somebody else, and then the person that's just chilling knocks the person out that's talking really crazy, I can sit there and watch that all
yeah.
day. That's palatable watching for me.
All right, enough of fake fights. It's time for the real news.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Hey, fill in the blanks on any update I've given you on the Astros in 9 out of the last 10 games or so. The Astros lost. They lost to the Rockies. The one thing exceptional about this was that it was 34 degrees at first pitch and got way more blustery as time went on. Jose Urquidy gave up 4 runs and 6 hits in 5 innings. He was having some trouble. He was throwing the ball consistently high. Gurriel, who entered the game 1-for-11, ended up driving in all 3 runs for the Astros. One bright spot, Wade. Houston was also 7-10 last year before they won 8 in a row. Yeah, that's not an advanced
lining.
Set. Yeah, earlier I tried to cheer you up with some advanced stats, and nobody ever buys my advanced stats because, frankly, they're not as smart as me.
Well,
I like other stat nerds, read stats off the internet and then present them and act like I did the calculations myself.
Well, I tell you what, man, there's something to be said for that, but there's something also to be said for the catch that Kyle Tucker made in the outfield. That dive, that's something to get excited about. He showed his range out there, made a hell of a play. Now, it didn't turn out to a victory, but we're trying to find some silver linings and some bright spots. That was a hell of a play by Kyle Tucker.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. Also, Miles Straw was out of the lineup due to the side effects of his COVID-19 vaccination. He played center field and batted Tuesday night. He was 0-for-4. If anybody didn't remember that Miles Straw wasn't good at the plate 2 days ago, there's your update. Yeah, he wasn't good at the plate.
Go back 7 days ago, then go back 7 days before that.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty similar.
So there's your Chaz McCormick started off. Gosh, what was the stat yesterday? I think Jake Kaplan tweeted it out. The at-bats in the leadoff spot since Altuve has been gone. The leadoff batters are 1-for-31 or something atrocious. So hopefully, as the Astros take on the Angels at home now, for one, Yordan Alvarez will be allowed to bat. So we got Yordan Alvarez back from the injured list, but they were in the NL versus the Rockies. So that was miserable to watch. Frankly, just an all-around miserable day, except for the fact that it was afternoon baseball, and I forgot that it was going to be afternoon baseball. So as I was sitting, as I was trying to figure out, like, how can I get out of doing these things I'm supposed to be doing in the afternoon yesterday, I got a notification on my phone that the Astros game was about to start.
There you go. And watching afternoon baseball, it got me thinking, man. I think I might have to put out, like, a Pinder poll in memories for Sean since he's not here. Maybe at the 8 o'clock hour, put out a Pinder poll of what is the best day sports experience for fans in professional sports? And so I'm going to put that out there. You know, NFL Sunday kickoff at 12 o'clock, a Major League weekday baseball game at 2 o'clock, or NCAA, you know, 11 a.m. kickoff on a Saturday. Like, what are the best day experiences for fans? And some of these things I haven't been able to experience myself because I've either been playing or just haven't been able to go to them myself, but I want to get interaction on that. But it got me thinking about that watching the Astros game yesterday.
Yeah, they really frown on tailgating before a game in which you're playing. Jadeveon Clowney found that out a couple years ago before that playoff game. Make a big deal. They make a huge big deal out of it if you try to go out to the if you try to go out to the tailgate area before a game. We'll talk about that after the news, actually, because I've got a couple little wrinkles to throw at you. In the NFL, some rule changes.
Okay.
And frankly, because I'm an old curmudgeon, apparently, I didn't even realize the rule change that was going to excite people the most. I mean, some of it's kind of boring. Onside kicks should be more successful because of a change they made. They changed some of the replay rules that might affect a few games here and there. There is going to be an emphasis on taunting. They don't want any more. There's too much taunting last year. We've lost our way. We need to be more sportsmanlike. But the one that got the most response from the fans, and now I get it, it's that single-digit numbers are going to be opened up to a whole lot more positions. I think most notably tight ends and defensive backs.
And wide receivers.
And wide receivers couldn't previously have single-digit numbers, but now they can. So could be some jersey changes in the future, and people are really excited about that. You two, Wade, you didn't strike me as a big jersey guy. Do you own a bunch of jerseys?
I mean, the jerseys that I own are ones that I played in. I remember that stage where like Mitchell and Ness jerseys were like a thing back in like 2002, 2003. I had a teammate of mine named Larry Chester that had a different Mitchell and Ness jersey on every day he came to work. So any kind of throwback jersey that you can think of, he had it. And that was the thing, and I thought that was pretty cool for him. It wasn't really my thing. And now, once you wear a jersey, you can't wear it again because, you know, it's out of style, I guess, at that point. But, no, I'm not a big jersey guy, but I am a big number guy when you're talking about being a baller on a roster. Like, if you were a baller on my high school team at Lake Highlands High School in Dallas, you wore a digit between 1 and 9. And if you won one of those digits, you were a baller on the team. So I think the same thing could be said for college football. I think the same thing now will be said for the NFL. And the NFL, of course, is always going to stay king. And they figured out a way to monetize and generate more revenues and get more sales because they're going to make a bunch of money off of whichever players, whether it's CeeDee Lamb or whatever young receiver or the up-and-coming guys, or even if it's an old-school guy that's a guy that's in his prime or a guy that's on his way out that changes his number. They're going to sell a ton of jerseys on that. And then they're making guys pay for it. And, of course, in the NFL way, they're going to figure out a way to get some money out of the players. And so I ain't mad at it, though, because the NFL, they continue to figure out ways to reinvent themselves and generate revenue and get people excited about what's coming up the following season.
Oh, yeah. So players will have to, if you make a number change, you have to buy out the inventory of your old number. That's kind of cool, though. You know what I would do? I would buy, if I were one of these fancy athletes,
yeah.
Wade. And by the way, everybody, Wade Smith's filling in for Sean Pendergast. Sean's out until tomorrow. I would buy all of those jerseys, and then I would hand them out to, where would I hand them out to?
I'd go to group homes. I'd go to, like people, like adoption agencies. That's where I'd give all the jerseys to them.
Oh, no, see, but I would have to do it, like, in Indianapolis or some city that I hate. Like, I kind of want to punish
like
the citizens
this.
Of that city.
I
want to get my name and number out there as much as possible in a city which I despise.
So, like, so if you're Tom Brady and you change your number, you buy up all of these jerseys and distribute them all over Atlanta. Like, that's what you would do.
Yeah, that would be right.
Like,
exactly.
that's the city that you go, like, I'm going to rub
it in. Or maybe
I'd
go to a sport, that, a city that cares about sports, though, too. Like, maybe
and
the
Falcon
other ones
fans can't stand Tom Brady or the Patriots. So that actually is a thing.
Kevin Porter Jr. of the Rockets apparently broke COVID protocol because he was at the strip club with Sterling Brown the other night. I should say morning, I guess. When Sterling Brown was assaulted, Kevin Porter Jr. was there. So by being at the strip club, he's going to miss some time because he went shoe shopping early in the morning. I didn't realize that when Sterling Brown, when the authorities arrived because he'd been assaulted, had multiple lacerations throughout his body, when they arrived at the strip club at 6:53 a.m. on Monday. NBA players lead a different life, man. They played the Heat Monday. Like, that was, they were out at 6 a.m. at a strip club. I don't know what time the altercation was and what time the authorities actually arrived. But it's not like they were out at, at 1 p.m. or 1 a.m. the night before a game. It was 6:53 a.m. when the authorities
arrived. Well, I will say this. I will not confirm or deny that leaving the strip club when the sun is rising is actually a thing. Like, that's not something that it's something I may or may not have experienced in life a time or two, especially when you're in Vegas.
But now that, when you got a basketball game in 12 hours?
Basketball dudes, they like you said, they operate on a different thing. It's not like, it's not football. Like, football, if you try to do that and come out and play, unless you're like Michael Irvin or something like that, Lawrence Taylor, you're not going to be able to function. But basketball dudes, they sleep it off, do their little shoot around, and go out there and give you 32.
Well, it's important to note that just because somebody's at a strip club doesn't mean that they're drinking.
Correct.
But this is, I always wondered about this because the NBA got smarter about managing guys' sleep and helping them get good night's sleep, because they used to have these early shoot arounds, and the idea was, I think a lot of times the idea was, well, we'll keep them from going out late at night because then they got to be up in the morning. The problem is that a lot of guys would still be out late at night, and then they'd show up, and then their sleep would be all messed up. But I wonder if you got to find a strike some balance, because I guess some guys are going to stay up no matter what, but then other guys are going to, maybe they weren't staying up, but now maybe they will. But if you can sleep, if you can leave the strip club at 7 in the morning and then still get a solid 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and then play basketball in the evening, I can't hate on somebody for that if that's the routine that they're in, I suppose.
Right, and I tell you what, man, basketball dudes are just different than NFL dudes. When I went on the road, that's when I got my best sleep. Maybe it's because I have a bunch of kids. Maybe it's because, you know, I'm an early riser. But when I would go on the road, I would sleep hard and sleep very, very well. I used to look forward to Saturday nights at the hotel because you got to sleep deep sleep in your own, you know, a bed by yourself. It was cake. But as far as like NBA dudes, they don't want to get in the bed. They want to go out and kick it and have a good time. And I ain't mad at them, but I just, different mentality. If I get a chance to get a great night's rest, I'm going to get it.
But they're also on the road for 43 games a year too. So it's different than, you know, their whole, like, baseball. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how baseball and basketball guys do it with their sleep schedules, just because you've got, you're arriving at 3 a.m. sometimes and then playing in an afternoon game and then getting a couple nights sleep in a hotel.
They
and
put
then,
them on
and
those flights on that have, like, you completely lay back. It's like being on those luxury liners, the luxury jets that takes you across the ocean. Like, they can sleep
still
on the plane.
Yeah, but that's, you know what that's like, though. You get 2 hours. I mean, because I could say the same thing about a bus. You know, we used to have to ride buses in college, and it wasn't like, yeah, okay, great. I slept on the bus. It's not like that's actual restful sleep. And then when you're in a plane, even as an awesome plane, and you're in better shape sleeping on that plane than if you're sleeping on coach, like a normal guy.
Yes.
It's still at 8,000-foot cabin altitude, and you're dehydrated, and then you get woken up, and you got to ride a bus to the hotel and everything. I just look, don't get me wrong. It's not like you're ditch digging or anything. It's not like it's a hard job. But it's just – it's erratic. It's erratic.
No question about it.
Justin Fields, the quarterback who will be drafted – I'm presuming in the top five. I know that people have him falling or what have you. At the very least, in the top 10. It was revealed yesterday by Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network that teams became aware during the pre-draft process that Justin Fields manages epilepsy, a neurological disorder that can cause seizures but hasn't affected Fields' football career, and doctors are confident he'll grow out of, as his other family members have. So I don't think this is going to be something that affects him, but it was kind of shocking when you see, because the headline writers do what they do.
Yeah.
And I thought like this was a new, I thought this was new. Like Fields had just had a seizure for the first time the other day or something. I played college football with our quarterback, Scott Carroll. He had epilepsy and he managed it. He would get Pettit mal seizures, or every now and then he'd kind of, lose control, he'd have to slump over against a teammate or something. He managed it with medication, and it sounds like he had it worse than what Justin Fields had. Although Scott Carroll, Cornell quarterback for at least one full season, never played in the NFL, so just makes you think.
Well,
you know?
I was completely surprised to hear this story, but
I'm joking, by the way, about the Cornell thing.
Right,
Scott was an NFL. I love Scott, but he wasn't not an NFL caliber.
He wasn't quite Justin Fields level, but. Justin Fields, the fact that he's been managing this for years now, and everything that we've seen out there on the field out of him to this point shows you that what you're getting now is what you have. He's been dealing with that the whole time. So I don't think this should ding him at all as far as dropping down a draft board or anything like that. Anything's possible with the NFL, but the fact that you can grow out of it, I didn't even know that was a thing. I just thought if you have epilepsy, you have epilepsy, and you take medication to stop the symptoms. But I didn't realize that it's something that you can just grow out of.
Two guys, one, Alan Faneca, I believe, had it while he was playing. He first the had lineman the from 50 years. Alan Faneca, I think he is great.
Did
offense.
He make the Hall of Fame yet or not?
I think he made it. I think he made it not this year, but the year before. I'm pretty sure he made
so
it.
So he straight controlled
he's
it.
From, he's from the great state of Texas. I think he's from this area, matter of fact.
He controlled it with anti-epilepsy medication. This is one thing I didn't know. Tiki Barber had them until around the age of six, but I see no mention of Rondé Barber. So, yeah, because they're identical twins, but Tiki had it. His went away relatively early in life. Samari Roll had epilepsy.
Samari Roll.
And his were, he was officially diagnosed in 2007, which would have been after he was done playing. So I don't
was
know.
Was he done? He was done in 2007?
Seems like he should have. Oh, maybe not. It was.
I remember playing against him, but I was with the Dolphins at the time, and that was before 2007. So I don't know how long his career lasted after that. But he was a good player, man.
Yeah, I'm guessing since it's never been an issue when he was in college, and NFL teams will look at that as basically a relative non-factor. I mean, they gotta check into it, but it should be a relative non-factor.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.